puts me back in Manitoba many moons ago.
Well, ordinarily it's time for Abandoned Manitoba. But today, is it? Is it really? Not to get caught up on technicalities. Gordon Goldsborough is here to explain why today we might be doing something a little different.
Yeah, good morning, Nadia. You know, only once before have we ventured out beyond the boundaries of Manitoba. Of course, this series is all about Manitoba. And the other place we went to see was actually just outside of the border, so it was still sort of close, but today we're going much further afield. But I think it does fit, and it actually has a connection to something that's going to happen here in Winnipeg very soon.
So we'll forgive you.
Okay.
What are we talking about today?
Well, actually, before we get started, I do want to just throw in one little mention of something. Listeners may recall that last year about this time, I mentioned that there was a nomination deadline coming up soon for something called the Lieutenant Governor's Award for Historical Preservation and Promotion. It was basically an award for people who've been doing good work on preserving our past. Well, actually, the deadline for this year is coming up soon. It's actually a few weeks from now, the 28th. And so I would encourage anybody who knows somebody who is really deserving of recognition to consider making a nomination of them and have it in by the 28th of February.
Thank you for the reminder. And if people are interested, how should they do that?
Actually go to the website of the Manitoba Historical Society. There's a nomination form there. There's some information on how you go about it. And if they ultimately have any questions, they can contact me.
Okay, so you also have some news about an exciting new project as well.
Yes, indeed. And that's what really motivates our episode today. We are going to be launching a new magazine called Prairie History. And it actually replaces an existing magazine called Manitoba History that we've been publishing since 1980. So for 40 years, we've been publishing a magazine on Manitoba. We're now renaming it.
And what was wrong with the previous name, pray tell?
Well, nothing in general, but it is reflecting a broader emphasis. So the reason that really kind of got this whole change going is that within the last few years, two magazines in our sister province to the west, Saskatchewan, have ceased publication. So in 2017, there was a magazine called Saskatchewan History. It stopped publication. It was a sort of a general magazine that sort of for a general audience. Anyone interested in history might have been interested in Saskatchewan history. Then last year in 2019, one called Prairie Forum, also published in Saskatchewan, ceased publication. And, you know, if we look at the two of them, one is a general interest magazine. The other one was intended more for a scholarly audience. If you merge them together, you'd get something that actually looks a lot like Manitoba history. And you thought, you know, our readers are interested in history. Why wouldn't they be interested in things about Saskatchewan as well? It's, you know, it's much of the same climate. It's much the same geography. It's much the same people. You know, why not broaden the emphasis of our magazine? And so that's what we're really going to do. We're going to produce a magazine that we hope will be attractive in that, well, one of the things about it is that it unlike a lot of other history magazines, it is not composed of sort of rehashed material from other sources. It's all original. Every single article in it is brand new, never before seen.
Can you tell us what's going to be in the first issue?
Well, just give you a little bit of a taste. So there's two feature articles. One is on something called the Home for Incurables at Portage-la-Prairie. It later became known as the Manitoba Development Center. And the other one is about the sights and sounds of Lower Fort Garry. We have book reviews. There are 8 book reviews of recent historical books. There's a heritage newsletter. There are 6 popular articles on a whole range of topics, including an architect who had a major influence on Winnipeg's building styles, the founding of Riding Mountain National Park, the life in a general store at Benito, and in fact, the story behind a rather macabre photo from the 1870s. And there's lots more, including a lot of sort of never-before-seen historical photos.
I'm impressed that this is all original content.
It's tough, you know, sometimes, you know, because there are so many stories that have been told. But, you know, one of the things that this series here has told me is that there are so many stories out there if you're just willing to be a little creative. You know, I'm amazed at how many cool abandoned places I've been talking about here. And I think likewise that we'll have lots of material to talk about in Prairie History.
Okay, so tell us about the historic site that you've chosen today, which is outside of Manitoba.
Right. So there's an article in this inaugural issue that's written by Regina-based historian and archivist Frank Corvomaker, and it concerns a site in Saskatchewan called the Clay Bank Brick Plant. It's located about 40 miles southwest of Regina, and it's been described as one of North America's best preserved industrial heritage site, a real gem.
Now, we've talked about brick plants before on this series, haven't we?
Yes, we have. In fact, if you go back to September of 2015, we talked about an abandoned brickworks near Sydney, Manitoba. And unfortunately, there's only a few remnants of that one. But I mean, I think listeners probably also know that there's a really well-preserved brick plant that's west of the village of Rose Isle, nestled in a very picturesque valley called the Leary Brickworks. It's magnificent. Unfortunately, it's relatively small compared to Claybank. Claybank was enormous, and it operated much longer, and it produced, of course, a lot more bricks than were produced at Leary. So in terms of, say, the significance of it to the architecture of Manitoba and other places, Claybank is a very major site.
Can you tell us more about the history of Claybank?
Well, a state-of-the-art brick plant was constructed there between 1912 and 1914. So there's, for example, a big pressing building. They basically would take clay, and in fact, the name of the town, Claybank, is because there is a really good source of clay there. That's one of the main ingredients in making bricks. They would press the clay into the original shape of a brick. Then they had a whole series of what are called downdraft kilns. Basically, they would bring the green bricks, the heated bricks, into the kilns, and then they would heat them for a period of several weeks to make them the desired hardness. Then they would go out into a sort of a storage building. There was also accommodations on site for the staff. There was a big office building. There was a laboratory. It was a big facility. And the other interesting thing, especially as compared to the one here in Manitoba, is that it made two kinds of bricks. So you had face bricks, which are the kind I think most people are familiar with. Those are the kind you use to build buildings, face bricks. The other kind are called fire bricks. And what a fire brick is, it's one that's intentionally good at surviving high temperatures. So if, for example, you have a steam-powered locomotive, you know, and you're using heat to create steam to run the locomotive, well, you need something to kind of keep the rest of the locomotive safe from the heat. So you line the firebox with fire bricks. And of course, every locomotive had to have fire bricks. So there was a big demand at one time for these fire bricks, and they were made at Claybank.
Is the plant still making bricks?
No, unfortunately, it closed in 1989. It operated for about 75 years. But unfortunately, its decline started even before 1989. The plant was sold to new owners from the U.S. in 1954, and they made what is now conceded to be a strategic mistake. They decided that rather than doing both kinds of bricks, face bricks and fire bricks, they would specialize in fire bricks. You know, there weren't many places that made fire bricks, and they thought, well, we'll corner the market, so to speak. Well, this was happening in the 1950s, just as all of the railways were transitioning from steam-powered locomotives to diesel-electric. They didn't need fire bricks because they didn't have a firebox, so the market was diminishing. Now, they did find other markets. So, for example, the 1960s, that was the period of the space age. There were all kinds of rockets that were firing off from Cape Canaveral. They needed fire bricks as well to kind of insulate the places where the rockets would blast off from. But as you might imagine, that's not exactly a huge market, you know, for rocket ship insulation. So, unfortunately, the demand for their products went down and down and down. And so finally, it closed in 1989.
If it closed in 1989, why is it still around today?
Well, I think it escaped demolition because they recognized how significant a place it really was. And in fact, in 1992, the American owners of the plant gifted it to a newly established Crown corporation called the Saskatchewan Heritage Foundation. It was established by the Saskatchewan provincial government to promote things like the Claybank facility, the other aspects of provincial heritage. Things seemed to be going on a really good direction in the early 90s. So in 1993, they established something called the Claybank Brick Plant Historical Society, and it was supposed to help, you know, generate public support. It was going to develop interpretive programming. In fact, in 1994, the federal government designated Claybank as a national historic site, you know, recognizing just how important it was to Canada as a whole. Much of the site had been restored by 2005, and things really seemed to be going well. And they converted the former staff bunkhouse into a visitor center because every year during the summer, anywhere from 700 to 1,500 people would visit Claybank and see this magnificent brick plant basically intact.
This all sounds way too positive to be featured on Abandoned Manitoba. This is the turning point in the conversation. What happened to
it? Yeah, unfortunately. Well, Frank Korvemaker, the author of this article, describes the last 15 years as a riches to rags story. So unfortunately, in 2004, the Saskatchewan government began to reduce its financial contributions to Claybank so that by 2018, all gone. No more provincial money except for a small contribution to pay the utility bills. And that was it. In 2019, last year, the Saskatchewan Heritage Foundation, which owns the site, they transferred the administrative responsibility to a branch of the Saskatchewan government. And that branch, in turn, has restricted access to areas that had previously been open to visitors, such as the kilns. The buildings now are not being maintained. They're starting to deteriorate. Frank has shown me some pictures that show the sort of the deterioration. You know, they need an infusion of cash just to stabilize some of the buildings. You know, so although the final chapter has not yet been written, unfortunately, the future of Claybank seems very much in doubt.
Now, are there any Claybank bricks here in Manitoba?
Well, yeah, I want to know that as well. I would think, given the output of Claybank, there almost surely would have to be some here. And so I did a little digging, and yes, indeed, I found at least two buildings here that were made with bricks from Claybank. One of them, unfortunately, is gone. So listeners may recall the old medical arts building at the corner of Kennedy and Graham. Not the present one, by the way, the earlier one that was actually demolished in the 1970s. It's now a parking lot. That building was made with bricks from Claybank. But if you want an example of one that is still standing, well, if you go along Notre Dame, right near the downtown core, there's a building called the Canadian General Electric Building, after the original occupants of the building. And it's a very attractive looking building. It's made of sort of a speckled brick. And in fact, it was a type of brick made at Claybank called TP Mocha. And this is a really nice example of a brick here in Winnipeg. So I'm willing to bet that when we start doing a little more research, we'll find other bricks as well. Because, you know, I say it was such a big facility on the prairies, one of the biggest ones, in fact, that it's almost a sure bet that many buildings are actually here are made with its products.
Now, you mentioned that, you know, if people are listening, interested in finding out more about Claybank, it's featured in your inaugural issue of Prairie History. Tell us a little bit more about how people can get hold of that.
Right. So if everything goes well, copies of Prairie History are going to be available starting on Friday, the 6th of March. We're actually going to have a formal launch because it is a new magazine. We thought, why not launch it? So we're going to have an event at McNally Robinson here in Winnipeg. We're going to have several of the editors of the magazine there. We're going to have several of the authors of articles there. And then subsequently, if you want to see the article, we will have copies of the magazine available for sale at McNally Robinson, both the store here in Winnipeg as well as the one in Saskatoon. But it's also available if you want a copy of Prairie History. It's available to all of the members of the Manitoba Historical Society. They are mailed a print copy. And we also have a digital copy that's available via our website.
Thanks so much, Gordon.
Mm-hmm.
What's the clue for next week?
Well, for several decades, a now derelict building that is within eyesight of the Trans-Canada Highway, it was home to Manitoba's two favorite winter sports.
Look forward to it. Thank you so much.
See you next week.
No matter where I go, every time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba, many moons.